half projects.
The ultimate in clothing kit for a no runner.
I like to call it the ultra kit, Scott.
Is that what you call it?
I do.
You can get it at pathprojects.co, or you can go to our website, go to the partners page, click on a link, and you can find how you can be stylish and comfortable at the same time.
So there's some amazing features with this Path Projects.
Yeah. We're going to do a little quiz for you. I'm going to give you the technical term and you're gonna, the feature, and you're going to tell me what the benefit of that is.
I like how you always put me on the spot. Go ahead.
Okay. We haven't rehearsed this.
It'll be obvious. Go ahead.
Okay. Natural tensile yarns that are derived from the eucalyptus tree.
Well, you know, first thing, eucalyptus has got to be one of my favorite smells on the planet.
Okay.
But I think in this context, Scott, I think it's just the stretchiness and the way this moves with your skin. It's like human skin, another layer.
You're exactly right. That is the feature that is in the shirts that make them very comfortable. Eucalyptus is very comfortable, and you're absolutely right. It's like a second skin. Like you're not wearing anything.
Good.
Okay, second one. Poor, quick, dry performance elastic.
You know, what is good about having just sopping clothes? You might as well just wear old-fashioned cotton. This fabric just wicks away and keeps you the way you want to feel. Cool.
You're kind of correct.
Well,
that's the elastic that's in the shorts and the base layer.
Okay.
That make it so that they're not going to wear out. It's going to last forever, and it's a soft elastic, so it's not going to, like, squeeze you to death.
Good. Okay, the third and final one, Scott.
The third and final one.
So I've got one, and I have a half of one. One and a half.
YKK zippers.
Oh, well, there's nothing more frustrating about going down the trail and finding that your key has fallen out of your shorts because your zippers broke.
You're exactly right. YKK zippers are the best on the market. They use all the best material for you, so that it's quality gear at reasonable prices.
So Scott and I have replaced all of our gear with Path Projects gear. We're going down the trail like we're, I don't know, well, like Path Projects ambassador, Scott.
And you can too. We recommend you, if you haven't tried it, go to pathprojects.co or to our partners page at trailrunnernation.com. Click on the banner and get yourself and try it. You won't regret it. What do you like about your Harry's shave, Don?
Well, Scott, have you noticed? I'm a Harry's man. Clean shaven, ready to go.
You're always, like, tight.
And you can become a Harry's razor man, too. Listeners of our show can redeem their trial set at harrys.com/TRN.
So what is in a trial set,
well,
Freeman?
Everything you need to try, Scott.
You get, it's a $13 value trial that you get the weighted ergonomic handle. You get 5-blade razor with a lubricating strip and the little trimmer blade. Do you use the trimmer blade?
I do.
I love the trimmer blade. A rich lathering shave gel and the travel blade cover, which I use actually all the time when I'm on the road traveling.
Well, that's why it's called the travel.
You won't regret your Harry's purchase, and it's a great value, great trial. We've been using it for years.
Make sure you go to harrys.com/TRN.
Ladies and gentlemen of the worldwide ultra running community, you are listening to nothing less than the greatest Trail Running Nation podcast on earth. It is the Trail Runner Nation podcast.
You're recording this, aren't you, Freeman?
I get everything.
Welcome. Thanks for joining another edition.
I'll start.
Thanks for joining another edition of Trail Runner Nation. My name is Scott Warren.
And I'm Don Freeman.
And this is a revisit with one of our favorite guests.
I call it more of a reunion, Scott.
A reunion? Family reunion.
A revisit is when you're being checked upon because
or
your
have to go.
Activity hasn't been real good.
We have Dr. Phil Maffetone on the podcast, and we were just reminiscing that our last podcast had nothing to do about endurance or running.
It had something to do with endurance because the Beatles have been around and entertaining us for a very long time.
It talked a lot about how the brain works, which I think is important to endurance athletes.
So today we're going to hit on Aerosmith. No.
Scott and Don, it's really great to be with you. It's so nice to start a podcast with laughing. So I'm happy to be here, and it's great to see you.
Just the other day, an email, and if you're not on Phil Maffetone's email distribution list, you should be. And you can get that at
philmaffetone.com, right? I'll link it in the show notes.
And periodically, I get a gift, an email with some knowledge in it. And today's podcast is about one of those emails called daydreaming.
Daydreaming. Interesting. And something that...
And we should add right away that this is a very important thing for runners.
Now, that's what we want to get into.
Now, why would you say that, Dr. Phil?
Well, because I think some of the people who listen to this podcast regularly were expecting more running from our last podcast. They didn't get a lot of it. It was a great podcast. It was actually one of my favorites.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. One of my favorites also. But as we started, and we'll get into this daydreaming thing, but to jumpstart that, we thought we'd go back a little bit to one of the many books that Dr. Maffetone has written. This one is The Big Book of Endurance Training and Racing. And if you are color-oriented, it's the big yellow book. Two books that you need to have on your bookshelf, almost teetering so they'll fall off the bookshelf into your hands as a reference guide that you need to have are the two big books. The big yellow book, which is the big book of endurance training and racing, and the other one, which is the big book of health and fitness.
And that's the red book.
That's the big red book. But we thought we would take one chapter and just discuss it briefly before we get into this daydreaming discussion. And that is chapter 26 of the yellow book, which is entitled, Don?
The Pain Game, How to Control It.
Ooh, pain game. What is pain and why do we have it, Phil?
Well, it's a question a lot of people ask, especially when they start having pain. You know, what is this pain thing? Pain is an emotion. It's for me, it's the best way to describe it because we sense pain in the brain and we sense it in the emotional areas of the brain, the limbic system and, you know, that area. And that doesn't mean that it's a psychological thing. Pain is real. There are physical causes of pain and there are biochemical causes of pain. And they typically come together. And so that's really the gist of it. The most important thing about pain is that when we have it, it usually means something is wrong because it's not normal to hurt, especially in endurance sports. Mm-hmm. This is not a hurting sport. This is not that sport where people run at each other at full speed and collide midfield. They're expected to hurt, and they do, and they suffer the consequences. But in endurance sports, you know, running is not something that should cause pain. Running is normal and healthy, and when we have pain, it means something is abnormal.
So if pain is not our enemy, how can we use pain to benefit us?
Well, we could use it as an assessment tool. So we wake up in the morning, we have pain. We have to say, what is going on? This is not normal. Should I go out and do my normal run, even though my low back hurts? Even though I'm crippled and I can't even get out of bed, am I going to try and do my run? People actually have to think about these things sometimes. In that regard, it's a very important tool, and there's a number of other offshoots to this. If we're having some discomfort, which is a very mild form of pain, and we go out for a workout and we get through our warm up, and that discomfort or that mild pain goes away, that's a very good sign. But if we go out and our discomfort or our pain gets worse and worse as the minutes and miles go by, that's a very bad sign. Movement should, you know, when we stimulate the aerobic system, we should improve muscle function. We have more oxygen uptake, oxygen metabolism, you know, just better circulation and so forth. And muscles improve. Muscle imbalance is sometimes corrected. And everybody knows this because as you get going, as you warm up, you feel more loose, you feel more balanced, your gait actually improves. And most people feel that. But if you have pain coming on more and more as you run more and more, it's time to stop and walk home. Don't even run home.
You know, I think that a lot of us, the knee-jerk to pain is, oh, I have a little twitch here, a little twing there, and our knee-jerk is to go to the medicine cabinet, pull out, you know, your favorite aspirin or NSAID and pop a couple. I remember when I first started running, I'm embarrassed to say this, but before I would do my morning run, I would pop a couple Advil before I started running, even if I wasn't hurting. That's bad news. So
that's really bad. And you know, there are a lot of people who do that. I'm astounded that somebody would do that, but that's what happens. And it's done before a race. It's done on race morning even more frequently, which is even more crazy. And the drugs people choose are the, you know, the aspirin type products, the non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, aspirin, ibuprofen, like Advil, and other compounds that reduce pain in part by reducing inflammation. Inflammation and pain typically go together. They're different, but they typically go together. So when we talk about pain, if you just think that there's inflammation there too, then you're probably going to be right. Acetaminophen doesn't affect inflammation. It just numbs you and puts a lot of stress on the liver. But that's another common drug. But most people go for the NSAIDs because they work better in sports because of their effect on inflammation.
How about what seems to be new on the market, derivative from the marijuana, CBD, non-hallucinogenic type of properties to help with pain? I've had some samples sent here because I'm a chiropractor, so they send some stuff here, either you know, chewy, gummy type things, or to apply directly to the skin and rub it in. Have you had any experience or thought about that?
Yeah, those are psychedelics. You might hallucinate if you take a high enough dose, but they're psychedelics. And there's THC, which is the compound in marijuana that produces the high, that psychedelic effect. And then there's CBD, which does not produce the high, but has receptors in the brain as well and has an impact on the brain. Medical marijuana, probably the most common reason for using medical marijuana is pain. So it's fairly well accepted that it can help with pain. It stimulates both THC and CBD. It stimulates the receptors in the brain, similar to similar to what opiates do, the same receptors, and at the same time, THC will stimulate the brain's natural opiates, those endorphins that runners always talk about. So yes, there could be help there. CBD is I'm not up on all the laws in all the states, but CBD, if you get it from hemp oil, it's legal anywhere. But there are CBD, higher amounts of CBD, and many of those are, or many states require a prescription for that. And then, of course, THC, except for the states that have recreational marijuana and medical marijuana, it's not legal as of yet, but definitely helpful. I've not found the effect from rubbing it on the skin helps much. Rubbing the skin, period, is a very good pain relief technique. Just rubbing, you know, if you have pain somewhere and you rub it every few minutes, it really can make a big difference because you're stimulating those nerve endings and blocking the pain through the nervous system that way.
So just to clarify, so the CBD has some pain-relieving qualities without the high. The THC both has pain-relieving qualities, but there is an additional psychedelic experience with it or a high experience. So you could take the CBD without worrying about impaired, you know, driving perhaps or impaired running.
Correct. Yeah. I think the CBD has been helpful. And again, I'm not up on the latest research, but there's a tremendous amount of research on marijuana that has come up in recent years with this surge of legalization in about half the U.S. states, and then many countries have legalized marijuana, and then the act of decriminalizing it has also helped get interest. Basically, there was a lot of research in the 60s, and then when marijuana was made illegal, that research disappeared, and then of late it's picked up, and it's considered by a lot of researchers one of the more exciting research fields. So some interesting stuff out there.
Well, regardless of whether you're using any derivative of marijuana or NSAID or acetaminophen, I mean, I think the point is all those things are not helping the root cause of the pain, right? It's just masking.
That's exactly right. Yeah, and that's really the important thing. People get in, you know, and I think the point is that we need to find the cause of the pain. We need to find the primary problem and not treat the symptoms.
And interesting, in this chapter 26 of the Big Yellow Book, I call it the Big Yellow Book, but that's not what it's called. I call it the Big
that's
Book.
That's what I call
that's
it.
Yellow.
That's what the author calls
that's
it.
That's what the author calls it? Okay. In the Big Yellow Book, chapter 26, it talks about some really eye-opening causes of pain that it may not be that you know, there's a lot of other aspects. You talk about imbalances in fat intake. You talk about the stress of life or stress of training and some other imbalances that can accentuate or elevate those pain receptors. Can you talk about that a little bit?
And Dr. Maffetone, if I could jump in front of you on that with a story to illustrate, because I was a skeptic about emotional pain until I was sitting in a classroom. I knew I was going to get called, and I knew I didn't have the answer, and I knew I didn't do the work I was supposed to do. And I was in the class of, you know, 50 people, and I knew certainly as that question was going to come, my back started to hurt and tighten up, and I did not have back pain. All of a sudden, I was having and experiencing 8 out of 10 back pain. I mean, it hurt.
Wow.
And then when I realized that I didn't get called, thank goodness, because I didn't have the answer, that it took another 2 to 3 hours for that to subside, I became the best lesson from an answer I didn't have was the lesson on emotional pain can cause direct and experience real pain.
So. That's a great story. What a great story. And, you know, we know about physical pain, physical stress. Let's just call it stress because pain is one of the symptoms of that stress. But physical stress is well known, but emotional stress can be just as damaging and hurtful as can chemical stress.
Well, good. Should we jump
in? Well, and that's, I think, a good tie-in to our primary topic, which is daydreaming.
Yeah, that's what I was doing, Scott. That was the segue. Oh, I recognize
I just beat you to it. Okay, no, go ahead.
I was there.
Scott, I have to cut you off because
please.
I was ready to answer your question, and I didn't.
Oh, okay. Go ahead and answer it, and then we'll let Don try to make the segue.
Occasionally get an email through the website, and it says, Dr. Maffetone doesn't answer the questions. So I don't want to let that happen this time. I want to answer your question.
Oh, okay.
Chris, I don't remember what your question was.
It was how can these other factors that you would a normal person or maybe a not so educated person like myself would not even think that emotional stress or the
nutrition,
the fat intake that I have, is a direct effect.
There's physical stress, there are biochemical stresses, and there are mental emotional stresses that can all contribute and cause pain. And they're quite often factors that overlap. For example, we mentioned low back pain, and we often will see something in the low back causing that pain. It typically would be muscle imbalance, which is a combination of abnormal muscle tightness, which the tightness by itself can cause pain, and abnormal weakness or an overstretched muscle. And the combination of those two, the muscle imbalance, causes typically joints to not move correctly. And as a result, there's a lot of pain fibers in those joints because they're pretty delicate. And if they don't move right, the brain wants to tell us right away that we're not moving right here. The joint then can produce pain as well. So now you've got a muscle tightness, typically you've got a joint that's also contributing to pain. And what happens fairly quick once the joints don't move correctly is we get a biochemical reaction called inflammation. That's a protective mechanism. And whether it's acute or whether it's a worsening of a chronic inflammation that has been there because you've had chronic back pain, the biochemical imbalance has a significant input into the pain mechanism. Again, inflammation and pain are sort of almost one and the same. And then if we're healthy, we should heal up. We should correct a lot of muscle imbalance. The inflammation in the joint should heal up after maybe some acute episode, maybe in a day or two or three. But if we don't have the right balance of fats, that isn't going to happen, because the balance of fats are important, because from that balance, we create our natural anti-inflammatory chemicals and our inflammatory chemicals. We need inflammation for the healing process. But if we turn it on to heal up after a workout, we then have to turn it off when we don't need it anymore. But if we don't have the right fats through the diet, then we can't turn that mechanism off, so the pain can continue. So there's a lot of factors that one has to consider when pain is front and center, as it often is.
And if you're thinking in your head right now as you're listening to Dr. Phil talk, what kind of fats should I be eating? What shouldn't I be eating? We're not going to have him answer that question, because you can reference back to the Big Red Book of health and fitness. He talks very, very detailed on what kind of foods, what kind of fats you should be eating and staying away from. So we'll let you do some research on your own there.
Okay,
transition music.
You know, it's the perfect segue. whatever the last statement was.
Yeah.
For daydreaming, and daydreaming is something that sometimes in society we get accused of being a daydreamer, and I don't know if it's good or bad. Dr. Phil certainly has an opinion, and I'd love to have a discussion about it. What is daydreaming essentially, Dr. Maffetone?
Daydreaming is what our brain goes through much of the time, and if we as daydreaming infers, it's what we do during the day as opposed to dreaming at night when we're subconscious. But daydreaming, you know, we do a lot of things during the day, but there's a lot of moments when we're not at the top of our game. We don't have to, you know, we're not doing a podcast, we're writing an email, and between sentences we might be thinking about, well, how do I want to say this? And then that might lead us into a bit of daydreaming, whatever the reason, and wherever we go as a result of it. But it's not uncommon to see people daydreaming. You can see them at the checkout counter, you know, they're waiting online and they're kind of staring into space, and maybe they don't realize the person in front of them has moved 3 feet and the person behind them is getting anxious because they didn't move 3 feet. Well, they're daydreaming. They're busy. So daydreaming is a way for us to time travel into the future and back into the past. Daydreaming is a very valuable thing because we learn a lot. We explore our mind in a way that we really can't any other way. It's a really wonderful thing. And the article I recently wrote, I began the article with talking about this kid in school who got in trouble, as I did when I was in school. That was Albert Einstein. I think when you look at some of the very creative people out there, they daydream a lot in particular. Daydreaming has a lot of value, and there's no question that humans have done it from the beginning, or theoretically from the beginning. Certainly in recorded history, we know that humans have done it from the beginning of history. It's part of being human. And I've been watching for some time now this bandwagon that is referred to as maladaptive daydreaming. And it's turned into daydreaming is bad. Now, I don't know if any of them who are into this maladaptive daydreaming thing will say daydreaming is bad. But every, all kinds of people are jumping on this bandwagon. Oh, that's me. I daydream when I'm at the checkout counter. That's bad. Should I get medication? And I think things are getting carried away. And that led me to write this article.
So it sounds like daydreaming is healthy. It's good. It's what people generations behind us have always done. What about the phone these days? As we look down at our smartphones, I think we probably remove the opportunity to daydream because we're engaged with our data that's flowing through that screen. I think of that person in the checkout line not going. I don't think they're daydreaming. I think they're looking at their phone and watching a movie.
Well, most of them are at this point. And that is part of the dumbing down process in our society. We're talking about people in not any longer just in the Western world, not in developed countries, but even in developing world. They all have phones. They're all looking at their email. They're all chatting away. I don't think that's healthy at all. And because of the increased connections with advertising, marketing, that we're exposed to on phones, we can't help but be dumbed down because of all that exposure. And as a result, we don't daydream as much.
So could you make a case for how the phone could actually enhance our lives and embellish and make us evolve even further? Could you even as just the devil's advocate, as somebody debating, could you take the other side and say, you know what, the phone is the best thing that ever happened to us, and because of all of this information that comes in, our minds will adapt, and in a few generations, you'll see our heads even larger because we're smarter. Could you even go down that path?
I'd have to really think about that. Certainly the phone has, it has valuable benefits in an emergency, for example. But we can also use it to listen to music. More importantly, we can use it to do work. I've used it in situations where I've been out and I didn't have my computer and I was writing an article, and I would pop into the medical library and look up some studies that I was thinking about And just on my phone, I find the newest, latest, greatest research available to me with a couple of clicks. And about, and I want to, not while I'm driving, but if I'm somewhere where I have to be standing for a while waiting online, which I really hate. I have a problem with waiting online. It's a very, it's a terrible thing. And I don't usually do it anymore because most of what I do is online. So I don't ever go to a bank or a post office or any of that kind of stuff. But sometimes I'm out there and I'm thinking of some research because I'm daydreaming about it. And I want to see what the latest study is. And I can, with a few clicks on my phone, find that latest research in the medical library and read it while I'm there on my phone. That's valuable. Listening to music, if we're going to be late for a meeting or we're early to a meeting, which is usually what happens with me, and I want to call somebody and say, hey, I'm here early. If you're here, let me know. You know, we do that with a message or whatever. That's something that can improve the quality of our lives. But people are not doing that. They're listening to commercials. They're chatting with friends or enemies. And it's taking away from other things that they could be doing, like daydreaming, which has tremendous value.
When I first started reading this article, I was thinking, we have a very negative connotation, as you make in the very beginning of the article, that daydreaming is bad. And as I started reading it, I thought, you know, when I catch myself daydreaming, I almost punish myself that I can't focus. I'm not focusing on the task at hand, and that I'm starting to go off on these tangents, and it's and sometimes I just think, no, I need to focus on what's at hand. And as I continued through the article, I realized that daydreaming may be more valuable than staying on task.
Exactly, and there's no reason why we can't focus while we're daydreaming. I focus intensely in some cases when I'm daydreaming. I may focus on, you know, I'm describing something in a technical paper, for example, and I want to be able to make, you know, put that sentence together that ties all this research up that I've spent, you know, 2,000-3,000 words talking about. That's a very intensely focused mental state. That's daydreaming. And at the same time, I may daydreaming in a very more broad way, where I'm in that alpha state, for example, like we talked about in the last podcast, where I don't necessarily, I'm not putting my daydreams into words, so to speak. I'm kind of letting the feelings out, and those daydreams are more feelings rather than language. That's a very valuable thing to do as well.
Yeah, I think sometimes we think of daydreaming, or at least I have, as, you know, taking a vacation with the mind. Maybe, you know, thinking about doing something else, or you're at the beach, you just transport yourself somewhere else. But I as we're having this discussion, I've had another thought about it. If we compare our mind to a computer, which is often, people have often done that, and, well, not my mind specifically, but others' minds, that when you need to do some type of task with that computer, it's best for speed to shut down all other programs, just to turn things off, mm-hmm. and so that you can use all the processing power and speed for that one task. And I think daydreaming sounds like it has that type of opportunity. Shut down all the other input that you don't need. Hey, move forward in the line. That guy is now move forward. The checker said this. The music in the background is playing this. You are totally shut off, and you're working on your problem to solve that. And perhaps that is the real benefit, or one of the benefits, of daydreaming.
You're exactly right. I think that potential is there. We do in our brain. We do focus best when we shut down other areas. That's why driving and texting is so dangerous. But it's not your hands that are the problem, it's your brain. And, you know, the government doesn't understand that because they allow people to have hands-free, phone conversations, when that's pretty much just as bad. Even though we're not looking at our phone, we're looking at the road, but as our mind goes elsewhere in our conversation, whether we're yelling at somebody in the back seat or having an intense conversation or talking on the phone, we don't have to look at the phone. It's taking away from our ability to drive. It's literally impairing us. Daydreaming is different. We can daydream when we drive, and we may miss our exit, which I've done many times. but we're, you know, the danger of driving doesn't exist, like as if we were texting or yelling at somebody next to us.
I think another example that occurred to me is that when we're trying to figure something out, we need all the processing power of our brain to focus on one thing. We often intuitively, you know, turn down the music, or we just shut down other distractions. We taste something, we close our eyes and remove all visual cues so that we can just focus on what we're tasting. So I think we do some minor daydreaming through actions like that. And other times when we have to really solve something, I think our brain recognizes, hey, we got to shut down stuff, and it puts us into this daydreaming state. It's not an accident, not a disease, not a pathology of some kind, but I think it's driven out of necessity, and our minds are smart enough to recognize when it's needed.
Yeah, and I think it's a big part of the creative process. That's what's important. People, you know, as part of the dumbing down process that we have ongoing in our society with technology, one of the things we're losing is creativity. And I think, you know, humans are by nature creative. That's how we've gotten to this point. We've been creative enough to survive, and not just survive, but survive better than all the other animals. And all of a sudden, we're not doing that. So I think even going out for a run, or getting on your bike. You know, I got rid of my road bike many years ago because I'd get on my bike and go for a ride, and I'd get lost. You know, in the area where I lived. And I'd kind of wake up an hour and a half later, and I'd be on a road, and I'd look around and I'd say, where am I? And I had gotten into this very intense alpha state, this daydreaming, reading my body and just enjoying the ride, and didn't realize where I was going. It's tough when you're in practice and you have to be back in time for the patient.
But well, you know, that's what I was just about to say, Dr. Maffetone, is maybe that's one of the things that draws us to this trail running or running, especially trail running, because you don't have the outside noise of the traffic and worrying about all of that. You're just out on a trail, and typically you don't have your phone with you, or you're not paying attention to it, and or you can't, or else you'll fall on your face. And it gives you the opportunity to really daydream, ponder, solve problems, be creative. And I think as we're going through this and talking about it, I think that's one of the reasons why I really enjoy running. It's almost like scheduled daydreaming.
Hmm. Yeah, and it's a wonderful opportunity to daydream. And if we daydream and we drift off certain ways, which is what's nice about daydreaming. You don't have an agenda. You just switch to daydreaming. Okay, now you're daydreaming. Your mind goes where it wants to go. It's like songwriting. I don't think about the songs I want to write. The song just comes out and I write the song. And if we leave our mind open like that, it will go places that can be a lot of fun. And it's a wonderful opportunity to expand your mind, so to speak. And in particular, being out there on the trail, what a wonderful place to be. It's for me, being able to go to the beach, especially the beaches that don't have many people, what a wonderful daydreaming experience that is.
Go ahead, Scott.
I was going to say, how is daydreaming different from visualization? Is there a difference?
Well, I think they're similar. We visualize sort of, it's more of a purposeful thing. I'm going to visualize a healthy gait. And you have to be careful because you don't want to mimic somebody else's gait. You want to visualize your own gait being really good. And that idea of visualization is a very healthy thing to do. But I think if you let your mind go somewhere, I think just getting into that state of daydreaming, you know, what happens is we get into that alpha state. And when we get into the alpha state, our muscles work better. So our gait's going to be better. Mm-hmm. But I think there's, that opens up a lot of interesting areas. Sometimes, for example, we might daydream during a run, and there'll be people in front of us that we end up watching and daydream about their gait. We might daydream about other things, but we won't go into that right now. Or if we're in a race and there's somebody that has passed us and we watch this person's gait, our brain has a visualization mode where when we are visualizing someone because we're watching them now, our brain starts to act in a very similar way. That could be good because if they have a really great gait, that can help us. A Parkinson's patient, for example, I would have them, you know, their gaits are not very good. And yet we want them to be active. We want them to go out and walk. And so what I recommend is that they walk behind someone who has a decent gait, and watch their gait. And their gait, you know, now the patient's gait all of a sudden improves because they're watching this other person who has a pretty good gait compared to them. And their brain makes their gait better. But we have to be careful because we could cross that line and visualize in a way that leads us to, for example, we're watching a marathon on TV and the lead runners, we're watching them for 2 hours and then, you know, we get really excited and we go out for a run and we try and emulate their gait. Well, we can't do that. That's a good way to get hurt. We want to run within our own needs and our mind is more than capable of allowing that to happen.
That's interesting. I've watched a parent and then a child who had similar gaits when they walk, mm-hmm. you know, and mm-hmm. I always thought, well, it must be genetically driven. They have similar skeletal systems and the length of the muscles are similar, but how much of it has been learned just from observing that the way they, you know, carried their hip and kind of threw it forward, whatever that idiosyncrasy might be?
Most of it's learned.
Wow.
We don't have a genetic gait. We grow up, we learn to walk, we learn from the time we're born, as we see our mother moving, our brain starts formulating how we're going to move. And the baby tries to move based on the mother's movements. And as we get older and we start seeing people walk and we start firing those, you know, those brain areas to send messages down to our muscles that eventually get us walking, we've done that because we've trained so much with our parents. And so we emulate them. And you could, I mean, you look at a bunch of, you know, look at a big pack of runners out for a fun run. You know, I mean, if you're used to looking at gaits, you could pick out the family members.
Mm-hmm. I had a question. Is it possible to daydream while engaging your other senses? So, for example, listening to music or a podcast or an audiobook, do those distract from effective daydreaming, or can it be done simultaneously?
Oh, it could be done simultaneously. The great thing about the human brain is that we can multitask. And I think, again, one of the dumbing down features of technology today is that we lose our ability to multitask. We don't want to test that out in the car, but you could see it in people. They're not able to do more than one thing at a time because the focus, especially with young kids growing up who go through that phase of increased screen time, in a brain that's developing, you know, through the teens, we lose that ability to multitask, but we should be able to. I drift in and out of some daydreaming as we're talking here. I think,
well, you know, I was going to say that happened to me too, but I just didn't, Phil.
I think it's a good sign, you know, of a healthy brain. But it's also something I learned to do long ago because I was a really terrible student and teachers would yell at me because I was daydreaming. That was the word they used. You can't. I remember seeing the report card. He daydreams too much.
Mm-hmm.
And we get this negative relationship with daydreaming from way back then, and it's that's still done today. But we should be able to multitask. So we should be able to listen to music, and when we're listening to music, all of our brain areas, if we want to break them into areas, are lit up. They're active. That's what music does. It stimulates all the areas of the brain, as opposed to doing math, where we only have certain areas of the brain that are turned on, or if we're reading, there's only certain parts of the brain that are enlisted when we do that. People who can multitask and people who are really good at daydreaming can be reading a book and do a mathematical problem at the same time. Hmm. I was looking at the, I was on the highway recently, and I noticed they put up a lot of these signs that says that say, exit 206, 14 to 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, man, what a dumbing down example that is. If I'm going a certain speed and I know the exit is a certain distance away, we should be able to know how much time it's going to take us. It's really, really simple. And I'm not going to give examples. It's just simple. If we're going 60 miles an hour, we're going, you know, a mile a minute. And if you're going 80 miles an hour, you're proportionally that much faster.
You've never driven in the big city, have you, Phil?
I think those are more aimed at the traffic patterns. So if, normally if you are going 60 miles an hour, it will take you, you know, an hour to go 60 miles. But I think those signs are for when there may that traffic is 10 minutes up is stopped.
Yeah, we have those issues. But, you know, so here's what happened. They did a survey. They found that people who knew how far the exit was, time-wise, were less anxious and they drove better. So somebody got the bright idea to spend millions of dollars to tell drivers that it's 14 to 15 minutes to this exit. And so that, I mean, that's treating symptoms.
So I'm convinced that daydreaming is good for a healthy brain. And I've been beaten now for many decades that daydreaming is not good. How do I improve my daydreaming skills?
Well, one thing is you let it happen.
Okay.
You let it happen by pushing other stuff away. Okay. If you have to do your taxes, you wait until the day before they're due. And then you push everything away and say, I got to really buckle down and spend, you know, it's a really terrible experience, even if you have an accountant. But letting daydream happen, letting daydreaming happen is as simple as muting your phone, you know, if you're not expecting an important call, turning off the news, not talking to your running partners, maybe even say, hey guys, we're going to go on this, you know, this 20-mile run. And wouldn't it be fun if we just relaxed more and daydreamed and listened to our bodies and enjoyed the trails? Of course, most of them would run away and you wouldn't see them, but you'd be left with some, you know, really fun partners, and you'd have a good time. People have a hard time not talking when they get together.
I think some of my best miles on the trail have been miles I've forgotten about because I was lost in my own space and time. Yes. It's like, have you ever just run down the trail and said, where am I? Have I passed that yet? You ask yourself, have I passed that one iconic spot? And you go, I don't even know because I haven't been here for the last 30 minutes. I've just been somewhere else. Those are some of the best miles.
Mm-hmm.
They're wonderful experiences. They're wonderful workout sessions. You know, you lose the hang up of miles. So where's that mile marker? How long is it going to be? You know, what, oh, here's mile 10. Okay. I'm at 10 miles. You know, just go out and run. And if you have to be back to the office, or if you're, you know, chasing the sunlight or whatever, you have a pretty good sense of when you need to turn around if you're not on a loop. But stop counting miles and daydream, because it makes for such a wonderful experience. What a healthy thing to do, because in part we're going into that alpha state. And when we produce alpha waves, they kind of go hand in hand with daydreaming. When we produce alpha waves, our stress hormone can be reduced. Our blood sugar can be stabilized. Our muscles can become more balanced. Alpha waves are very therapeutic. So it's that's why we feel so good doing it, because we're getting this wonderful treatment.
So let me ask you this question. How do we then go into this wonderful daydreaming state that we're running with the alpha waves that are happening, but still be cognizant, aware of all of the details that we need? Like, should I drink? You know, what's... Mm. We talked about, you know, just being alert while we're to our biofeedback mechanisms that we have. How do we square that?
We do have to be alert, but that doesn't mean we have to be on high alert. You know what I mean? It's not that, okay, I've got this checklist. How does my knee feel? How does my other knee feel? How does my back feel? Is my fluid okay? Is my sodium okay? Is my blood sugar good? Our brain does that for us. So if we're running along and we're completely lost, and we don't know if we're in mile 5 or mile 15, what a wonderful experience that is. And all of a sudden, we are running low on fluid. Our brain tells us we get thirsty, and it's a fairly powerful message we get from the brain. But we should be in good enough health to go out for a 10-mile run or a 15-mile run or whatever, and not need much of anything, if anything. For most people, a long run without water is perfectly fine. And likewise for food, of course. But if we need, if something happens, you know, if we have pain in our knee, we're gonna hear about it. We're gonna come out of that alpha state. We're gonna come back to Earth, and our brain's gonna say, "There's some pain in the knee. What's going on?" And then we're gonna focus on the pain in the knee. We're gonna think about, is this a recurring problem I've had? Why is there pain in the knee? I haven't had that before. Are my shoes tied right, or am I in a different pair of shoes? You know, am I running, you know, whatever. We're gonna go through this whole checklist of things and decide there's nothing we can do about it, so therefore we're gonna slow down, or we're gonna walk. But when we're out there and we're in that alpha state and we're just daydreaming and having a wonderful time, we're more than capable of being and staying on autopilot for the whole run. Our brain knows where we're going, and it knows everything else about us.
You've convinced me. You're absolutely right. I imagine if we had a drone flying over this person in an alpha, they would definitely still be drinking. They would do all the things that they needed to do to take care of themselves, and probably better on autopilot than having our own conscience run this ship. I think on autopilot, exactly, we're probably better.
You're exactly right. And it won't be long before we have drones flying over us. And if we have drones flying over us, which we will have very soon, it wouldn't take much for those drones to pick up potentially our brain waves. Right now we have to, you know, have something attached to our scalp to pick those waves up. But I think the technology's going to be going to where we don't have to have those things glued onto our scalp.
And that solution, that will be solved by somebody daydreaming about it.
Without a doubt, that's where most of it comes from. And I think Einstein said something about that one time, is that, you know, daydreaming is where all the great discoveries come from, or something like that. You know, you cannot think about gravitational forces in relation to the speed of light, just to give you an Einsteinian example. You cannot rationalize that. So as a result, we have to daydream it. We have to not put that into words. We have to daydream it. We have to have an abstract relationship to that bizarre, you know, whatever. And once we get a feel for that complex understanding in physics or whatever the subject is, once we feel it, once we understand it without the words, then we can put it into words. But until we do that, it's, you know, we're not going to come up with a whole lot.
Dr. Maffetone, do you think that the universe has some of those answers out there, and that those that, like Albert Einstein, they were aware, receptive enough to connect with the knowledge and somehow manifest it, bring it into his own brain? I know this is like a late night talk show type subject, but you know, who is that guy that did that? I don't know his name, but do you think there's some of that knowledge just floating around out there that we're picking up on?
It's not floating around anywhere. It's in our brains.
It's already in
our brains. It's already in us. Our brains are so amazing. We have more connections in our brain than there are stars in our universe. I mean, just our brain is a that's why the computer analogy is so poor. Yeah, there are some common themes between computers and the human brain, but the human brain is, you know, and again, as Einstein said, in addition to imagination being more important than knowledge, which is a very good quote. Mm-hmm. We only use a small percent of our brain. Imagine if we can use a lot more of our brain and how much more we could accomplish. So I don't think there's anything floating around out there. We live in a natural world, and the natural world is all around us. And when we make sense of certain things, that's when things are discovered. Oh, look at this. This and that are related. Wow, we didn't know that before. Now we do.
We opened up talking about Albert Einstein, and we're closing with a little bit of Albert Einstein. Could you imagine his teacher that sat down with the parent-teacher conference and said, "We're worried a bit about Albert. He seems to be daydreaming and he's not catching on like he should."
I think I'd rather have the discussion with his teacher after Albert Einstein grew up. And he's going, oops.
Missed that one. That one I missed.
Missed that one.
Well, I just, you know, I've met some really amazing people in my life. I've been very fortunate to do that. And many of them, you know, who are super creative have that same story. You don't usually hear, "Yeah, I was really smart from the beginning, and I got, you know, I was always at the top of my grade. You know, I graduated at the top of my class, and you know, there's just so many examples out there. I like to use Einstein because he's among my favorites. I actually have a couple of Einstein's, I think the first two research papers he wrote that were translated into English, I have them on my desktop. Hmm. And once in a while, when I'm writing up some research or thinking about some research, I'm trying to formulate how is this going to work? I'll click into one of these papers and I'll start reading it. And the ease, the simplicity that he was able to write in, to introduce a topic. Of course, he eventually gets into where he's not using letters and words anymore. He's using mathematical symbols, and that usually gets me lost. But to see how well he could get those words across, as bad as words are, as unnatural as words are, he was able to formulate them in part because he daydreamed about it first. But to see that in action, and as a reminder, it was just a wonderful thing to do.
Yeah, you know, it's too bad our educational system is not built to encourage that. And in fact, it's built to discourage and memorize
exactly.
Facts and create
yes.
Instant recall and that sort of stuff, instead of, you know, using your brain to do what it does best, and that is daydream and think.
Solve problems.
Yes. Solve problems. Yeah.
Yes. And the you know, some people learn better when they read about it. Some people learn better when they hear about it. Well, if you don't read well and you don't listen well, which many people don't, including Einstein, including me, we learn best when we're kinesthetic.
Yeah.
We need to learn by doing. And daydreaming is a way of learning by doing. Your brain is doing things.
It doesn't know whether you're doing it physically or not, right? It's virtual
exactly.
reality.
Yep.
Well, good. I encourage us more to embrace this daydreaming. I think it's good. I think it probably lowers blood pressure, stress, cortisol levels, all kinds of things that we're up against that if we just let our bodies do what it does best, well, knows how to do.
And by the way, you know, daydreaming is a wonderful technique that I have recommended to athletes in a lot of sports. Sometimes you can't do it because there's some technical things involved. But for a runner, especially an endurance athlete who's out there for hours in a race, what a wonderful thing to do to be able to manipulate time. In your mind, you don't manipulate the clock, but you manipulate the time in your mind. So it feels like the race has gone by a lot faster. What a wonderful thing to do.
That's gold right there.
In the book, recent book, Endure by Alex Hutchinson, they speak in one of the chapters about a person that had an issue with epilepsy. Oh. She had a surgery. She lost track of time and space, and so she didn't know whether she was out there for 10 minutes, 10 hours, and just didn't know. And as a result, was able to continue going far beyond what we normally expect because her mind wasn't measuring distance and time. She was just present at the moment, and that was it. Mm-hmm. Couldn't look back,
couldn't look ahead.
Yep. Yeah,
great example.
And that's a wonderful book. I don't know if that's on your bookshelf yet, but a very, very good
book. It's on my book list along with a whole lot of others. But good. Yes, well, I've heard some good things about the book.
Yes. So if you've daydreamed a bit during this podcast, congratulations, we've done our job. Now go back and re-listen and
go read some of Dr. Phil's books to give you maybe some topics to daydream about, to spur on a dream of dayness.
Dr. Maffetone, as always, our absolute pleasure to have you on. And I think we could take just about any topic and go and talk about it, even the obscure late night talk show stuff.
Thanks, guys. I really have so much fun doing these things. So I appreciate it. And thanks for having me on again.
Now go out and daydream